When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
On the latest episode of Bigfoot Collectors Club, The Other Side, we pit eight classic movie monsters against eight classic cryptid creatures to find out who is the ultimate monster of all time. Brace yourself for twists, turns, shocks, and fatalities galore in the epic that listeners are calling A Wild Ride, and a wonderful and insane episode. So cross over to patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club for more info.
Bigfoot Collectors Club presents
Terrifying Tales from Zombie Bigfoot's Cryptid Crypt. I know a ghost story about you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Bigfoot Collectors Club, the show where we talk to amazing guests about their personal paranormal history and share stories of high strangeness. I'm your ghost, Michael McMillan. With me is your other ghost,
Bryce Johnson.
And your supernatural producer,
Riley Bray.
Terrifying Tales from Zombie Bigfoot's Cryptid Crypt continues for the month of October. And boys and girls, we have something very special. It's a Halloween treat for you guys. I'll tell you what, we didn't know if we were going to be able to do this. So it's a surprise. We're dropping it in your candy baskets. What you're about to hear is a live show that we did with two of our favorite paranormal investigators, Greg Newkirk and Dana Newkirk, husband and wife couple. They are, of course, the people behind the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and Occult.
Yeah, and the groundbreaking documentary, Hellier.
Exactly, which we've talked about so much on here and the other side. So we actually were invited, the three of us, to do a live Zoom show for PhenomenaCon last month and talked to Greg and Dana for the first time. These are two guests that we've been dying to get on the show, and they know all about this stuff, and they're the perfect couple to talk to in the middle of the Halloween season. But we had so much fun doing this, didn't we, guys?
Yeah, this is a great episode.
It was a highlight of this year, honestly.
Yeah.
It was a night out on the town. It was a good time.
It really scratched that live show itch, which we were doing these live shows at the Bigfoot Lodge in LA before the pandemic hit. We met so many new listeners doing this. So thank you to you guys who jumped over and started listening to the show. And so we have a treat for you. This is the live show. And if you are a member of The Other Side, Greg and Dana graciously gave us the video. This doesn't exist anywhere else. They gave us the video that was only supposed to exist for 48 hours or even less. I think it was like 16 hours on their feed.
Wow.
And we're going to put that up for you on The Other Side right now. So if you want to see the live version of this, you can go to patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club. Join the Patreon. If you're a Patreon member and you'd rather watch the live show than listen to it, you can go over. It's going to be up for you right now. And that was really cool of Greg and Dana because this was not supposed to exist, and they essentially gave it to us. So we're grateful for that. But anyway, we will leave it there. Enjoy the live show. We're going to be back next week with a, I think, a really fun, fun episode. We might, can I hint at this? Is it okay to drop a hint?
Sure. People like hints, clues.
It's going to be our first deep dive episode since Roswell. So get ready, guys. We have something very special cooking up for you for the ultimate or towards the end of Zombie Bigfoot's Cryptocrypt right before Halloween. Until then, enjoy our live show, and we'll see you next week. Bigfoot Collectors Club. Love you guys. Go get regressed.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest.
Wrong show.
What? It's after midnight. I thought this was our chance to do coast to coast. No?
Nah, bro, no.
Oh, man. Well, hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to a very special live episode of Bigfoot Collectors Club here on the PhenomenaCon live stream brought to you by the good weirdos at the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and Occult. I'm your host, Michael McMillan. With me always is your other host,
Bryce Johnson.
And our super producer,
Riley Bray.
Hey, for those of you who are at the con and winded down and wondering who the hell we are and just listening to us for the first time, BCC is a weekly comedy paranormal podcast about the unexplained, where we interview amazing guests about their personal paranormal history and share stories of high strangeness.
That's right.
I'm Michael. I'm an actor. You may have seen me in shows like True Blood or Crazy Ex-Girlfriend or Perry Mason. Bryce is actually, I mean, look, we're enthusiasts about the paranormal. We're not experts necessarily. We're kind of like, we're kind of like you guys who just love to think and talk about this stuff. But that being said, Bryce, I mean, you have a little bit more experience in this field than I do.
Hey, no more than you, man. I mean, I started out as an armchair, but yes, I also am an actor and a producer, and you may recognize me from shows like film like Willow Creek and TV shows like Pretty Little Liars, and also Travel Channel's Expedition Bigfoot. So I'm so excited to be here tonight, man. This is a thrill for me.
You've actually been on a Bigfoot hunt. Where?
Yeah, I'm an expert now.
Yeah, we're just,
you're an expert.
We're posers. Riley, why don't you tell the good people who you are?
Hey, everybody. I'm Riley. I'm a musician and a producer. I play in a band called Spindrift. I'm also a video director. I work for Gibson and making their content on Gibson TV. And I work with these two guys producing this show. And it's a labor of love. And we've all become best buds over making this show.
The rule is come for Michael and Bryce, stay for Riley.
I'd like to think so.
He's our secret weapon. So tonight, to wind down day one of PhenomenaCon, we are sitting down with the two, if not just two, maybe the two creators of the conference for a special Club Bigfoot after party midnight chat.
Yeah,
they are.
That's the Club Bigfoot sound.
I'll drink to that.
Cheers. Exactly. If you got a martini, break it out, guys. We're coming down. This is gonna be kind of a chill hang tonight. Yeah. I sound like a real dad with no kids.
This is my special non-alcoholic beer.
Cool Dad's Club.
Yeah, Cool Dad's Club. Cool Dad's Club.
Our guest tonight. I mean, come on. They are paranormal investigators. They're co-founders of the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and Occult. They're co-producers of Planet Weird, the production company that brought you the documentary series that reinvented paranormal investigation shows, Hellier, of which they both starred in. We are huge fan of theirs, Bryce, Riley. I mean, we've talked about Hellier and specifically these two people on the show multiple times.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
They've never been guests. I'm so excited that we are finally able to sit down and talk to them, pick their brains at a very vulnerable moment in their lives, which is at the very end of a long, productive day for them.
We got them right where we want them.
Yeah, we're going to get it all out now.
They're guarded down.
They can't hide anything from us. But we finally get to talk to them about our favorite topic, high strangeness. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a warm Club Bigfoot salute to Greg and Dana Newkirk.
Yeah.
What's up, dudes?
My God. Oh, yeah. Look at these guys.
We're finally making it happen.
It's happening.
I am so, you know what? It almost works out better that this is how this happens. Because I know that we've been trying to do this for a long time, but we're like the worst.
No.
By the worst, you mean the best.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
First of all, I hope you guys have, if you drink, I hope you have a martini. If you don't, I hope you got a soda water. You guys.
Soda water.
Hey, cheers. You guys nailed cheers. It today. I got to say, Bryce and I both, Riley was working all day today. Bryce and I are the only people who don't actually work right now. So we got to watch the conference today, a good chunk of it, and it was fantastic. I'm gonna steal your guest list for the show.
Do it. That's the whole point. Yeah. We want these are all the people. It's a very highly curated list of people that are important
much smarter
to us
and much smarter than we are.
Yeah, and inform all of our thoughts and ideas.
That's very true.
And you know, they're people we love. But that's also why we wanted you guys to do this with us.
Oh, thank you so much. Aww. How are you guys feeling? Are you good? You feel good about? You ready to kick back, have a drink, go to bed?
Dude, I've been up till 6 o'clock in the morning for the last 3 days, so I'm roaring, rip roaring, ready to go.
I don't really know what's gonna come out of our mouths. It could be good, could be bad.
We'll take
We're just
it either
gonna
way.
Go on this journey together, I guess, is what's it's about to happen.
It's the lucid hour.
Yeah.
So for people who listen to our podcast know that we like to ask all of our guests, and for you in particular, the two of you, this is an extremely loaded question. What is your personal paranormal history?
Oh, God.
You can answer that however you want. If there's like one starting incident or your favorite incident, we know that you guys have probably a few you're thinking of.
I mean, I can start.
Yeah.
My history is honestly very boring. I didn't experience anything weird. I mean, everybody, it seems like the more that you dig into this, everybody has like their story, right? The story that started them, the ghost that they saw when they were a kid. I never had any of that. I had to go looking for monsters, and I typically did not find them very much. It was mostly just me and my friends falling through the floorboards in abandoned buildings as kids. And then eventually,
from what I've heard about your backstory, there was a lot of like teenage shenanigans and possibly loaded weapons in your backstory.
Lots of loaded
dude,
weapons.
Dude, my friends and I used to steal our parents' credit cards and order like crossbows and medieval weapons off of eBay.
I've seen this photographic evidence.
Because the way that we started was we were really just sort of like vampire hunter LARPing. We weren't really taking anything seriously. And then there was the day that like some weird stuff started to get thrown at us in a cemetery, but that was like a year into our origin story. And
the
that's
day
really
you
how
had
it started.
To fire your crossbow.
You forgot your crossbow.
No, here's the problem. That crossbow was always fired at each other.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
One we of used you to have died in for sure.
But see, here's the thing though, because we were vampire hunting. We would go to shop class, and we would be secretly carving stakes, and we'd make long ones that would go into the crossbow.
Oh my God.
The problem is when you fired it, they always like did this like flip when they come out because they weren't made to do that. And then I almost watched my friend Nick get impaled by it. Jason shot one directly at him. So there you go. That's mine.
You're like trying to like smolt your like silver amulet. You're like, yeah. I just need a special tip for this one, Mr. Hayworth.
He found the secret forge in his high school that he didn't know was there. He's like,
no,
a
it
forge
was
here.
It was the shop teacher who had like three fingers. Yeah. Is who our forge was.
The only thing we ever did in shop was like build like boxcar like derbies. Cars, and then like our shop teacher would put on Home Improvement every Friday. We would just watch Home Improvement. He was amazing. Like done. He
that's
was gone
so
for the
funny.
Week.
And that's what we were supposed to be doing.
Yeah,
was making cars and watching Home Improvement. But my friends and I were
they had monster
bad
hunting
kids.
Weapons. My story is a little bit less violent and teen angsty, I guess. My friends and I really, we were just interested in weird things. And I mean, originally, we really didn't realize that you could go out and even look for stuff like this. And it wasn't until I actually found Greg's website when we were way back in the GeoCities days in 2001. And yeah, we just started going out and investigating. And it was kind of the same sort of thing. It was that moment where when something really weird happens when you're out there and you kind of have to sort of come to terms with the fact that it's real. And you're just, everyone's like, this is actually real. Ghosts are real. So there was a lot of that in the early days and just out kind of exploring weird haunted places in Kitchener-Waterloo, which is where I'm originally from.
Waterloo, say that again. I'm sorry.
Kitchener-Waterloo, Ontario.
Oh, wow. Ontario. Yes. Yeah, so
I'm Canadian.
What, on like Canadian folklore, ooh, do we not get down here that you're like, oh man, if they only knew about this cryptid, they'd be super stoked.
I wish that we had like a like just Canadian only cryptid, but I feel like.
What was the one Tyler was talking about the other day? He sent you a screenshot from Cabbage Town, and you're like, I lived there for years, and I never heard of that.
The Cabbage Patch Kid.
It was just the basic time. Like, it looked like a little Mothman.
It was a goblin.
But he lives in the sewer in Toronto, apparently. So
that's fun.
He's just a little guy. Just a little Mothman. Our Canadian Mothmen apparently are smaller and don't have wings.
Isn't that what qualifies you to be a Mothman?
Maybe he'd be like a lizard man. He has the beady red eyes, though. So that's what makes me think of Mothman.
Right, yeah, right.
I can't think of like a Canadian only. The only thing that comes to mind, and I'm just, this is a stupid joke, but like I'm thinking of Trailer Park Boys and like Bubbles saying Sam Squanch. So maybe we have a Sam Squanch.
It's a classic. It should become an official. Like,
it should. Cryptid. We need to put them on our money, I think. Make it official.
So how did this happen? How did you two get together?
Oh boy.
We hated each other.
We did.
We were
really.
Oh yeah.
We had rival ghost hunting teams back in 2000.
They weren't rival. They didn't start as rival. We were more like a brother sister group.
We need you to unpack all of this. Mm-hmm.
All right.
So my team in Canada, we were all female. So we were an all-girls team, and we met the Crossbow Kids, and we kind of started up a fun online kind of friendship. And we, at the time, I think we were probably on the same level as far as investigating the paranormal ghosts. So we were learning from each other, which is terrifying. But what initially started off as like a fun, brother sister team, unsurprisingly ended in.
Here's what happened.
There we go.
here's what happened.
Break it down.
Might say
there were two key elements that happened that caused us to become mortal enemies.
Yes.
The first was, this tells you what kind of boys we were, because we were an all dude team. I don't know if we caught this, but we're kind of nerds and weren't really great with girls. So they said, hey, we're going to plan a trip and we want to come down and spend a weekend with you guys. And instead of us doing what normal teenage boys would do when a bunch of pretty girls want to come down and spend the weekend with them, all of our grandparents died at the same time.
It was very suspicious.
We were like, they're not staying with me.
Girls allowed.
Early unintentional occult ritual. It sounds like
kind of.
It was terrible.
We were very worried about some sort of grandfather's only murderer that lived in your town. Oh, yeah.
Something weird is happening where Greg lives.
Yes, and it's only going after grandparents.
That was the start, and they were miffed about that, which I don't blame them. And then the real kicker was they got a television show. Yeah. They got a television show out of the deal. They were really the first Canadian ghost hunting show. Yeah. I mean, it came out like the same time as Ghost Hunters. It was crazy.
That's why I always make the joke that we our show is called The Girly Ghost Hunters, and we traveled all. Greg's got his.
That's Greg's alarm for tomorrow morning.
What a professional over here!
Hey, dude, day two's starting. You got to get up.
Yeah. Oh my god! But yeah, so my friends and I had a TV show called Girly Ghost Hunters, and we investigated the paranormal all across Ontario. And we came, our show came out the same year that Ghost Hunters did. And we were, I think we aired 6 months before Ghost Hunters. And the joke I always make is that we got one season and they got 10. But we were six months right. earlier, though. So I can brag about that, I guess.
We were a bunch of butthurt dudes about it. And so what was the last thing we, I'll never forget. It's etched into my mind.
Yeah.
I was at home and Dana sent me an instant message. What was it on?
It had to have been like
Yahoo Instant Messenger. And she was like,
it was 2001 when this happened.
What's wrong with you guys? Why are you being such
They
dicks?
Were being really mean to us.
And I had one of my friends over my shoulder.
Yeah. And then the last thing that Greg said to me was that I was a hairy slut.
Greg!
No.
Yeah.
Those are the last words we spoke for like years.
For years.
Years.
Oh, wow. Boy. Now I'm getting a full painted picture of why this didn't work out at first.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he must have really liked you. It sounds like to me.
I think,
I did. It was a forbidden love.
Yeah.
When you're a teenager, when you're 16 and someone's a few years older than you, it's a bigger deal.
Yeah, for sure.
Like a prison deal. So.
Yeah.
It couldn't happen. Plus, she was dating the captain of the football team.
Right.
And so it just wasn't,
And you were a nerd making crossbows in shop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then 7 years later, it was something like 7 years later, Greg was moving and he decided to go on a kind of pilgrimage of apology. And without contacting any of us, he and his friend printed off pictures of us and drove to our town and literally just started asking around.
Aww.
And found us in like, 40 minutes?
45 minutes we had our first lead.
Yeah. And then we went on a ghost hunt that night.
Uh-huh. This is just support that all Canadian murders are solved within 45 minutes. Print out pictures, walk around town.
That's all you have to do.
Pretty
solved.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She lives right over there. She's been dating the captain of the football team, you know.
Yep.
That was pretty much how it went, too.
Yeah. And it's also alarming that, like, Canadians will also just tell you where each other lives without any concern about your safety or well-being or anything like that.
So,
yeah, that's
ideal.
Dana, you are not just a paranormal investigator. You are also a magic practitioner. And are you a Wiccan? Am I getting that? That's not right, is it?
I've been practicing magic for over 20 years now. And I think I'm the first person to say that I had a Wiccan phase. It was pretty much during the beginning. But now, nowadays, I kind of just refer to myself as a hedge witch. And it's just sort of a term for me that kind of, it basically means I practice solitary. So I'm not in a coven and I don't really work magic with other people. And usually the magic that I practice tends to be pretty nature-based. So I focus a lot on working with nature and the cycles of nature.
The hedge witch, that's such a cool phrase. I remember you saying that in Hellier, so forgive me.
Yeah,
it makes me think about the hedge knights, you know, who used to be knights that were just like, hey, I'm a knight for hire. I'll help you out if you got a problem, but I'm not like sworn to any kingdom. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, hedge witch is really like one of the best ways to think about them is they were usually, sometimes they were referred to as cunning folk, but they were people who practiced magic or they practiced folk magic and they worked with herbs. And they usually were the people who lived along the hedgerow. So they lived further away from the town itself, but not quite completely separated from the town. So if you needed something, you would have to go right to the edge where the wilds and the forests were. And that was the spaces that the hedge witches would live and kind of, you'd have to go out into the dangerous spaces just a little bit, but you weren't quite out into the wilds.
So what are the benefits of like, you know, going kind of lone wolf as opposed to like working in a coven? I bet you there's a lot of advantages.
Sure. I think for a lot of people initially when they start practicing magic, it's nice to have people around you that you can bounce ideas off of and you can learn from. But the older I get and the more that I do practice solitary, really, it does become a very personalized spiritual practice then. And so I might have a way of doing something that's very different than another person, and maybe they would be uncomfortable with that, in circle. So it's kind of a nice thing because it's a very kind of fine-tuned and tailored spiritual practice that really, for the most part, it has happened that way just because I've been practicing solitary for so long.
Incredible.
So, Greg, you said that you never had a anything really happen to you, but obviously you guys were interested in this beyond vampire LARPing. Like, you know, I think Riley and I had weird experiences as a kid. Bryce had a weird experience as a kid. But I think sort of the common ground that we discover is like, hey, turns out your public school library has some really cool books.
Yeah. Yeah. True.
I want to know if that was potentially a gateway for you into like how you got into this subject.
1,000%. 100,000%.
Yeah.
It was really, you know what it was we were vampire LARPing. It all started because we wanted to scare our friend in a cemetery. And then when weird stuff happened, like we had our older brothers and older friends hanging out there, and it was like Blair Witch signs hanging from the trees and stuff like that. But when weird stuff happened, we had such a good time, we went out again. And then like occasionally like somebody would feel a tap on their arm or we'd get something thrown at us. That's when we would hit the library and we would start reading books by like Ed and Lorraine Warren and Hans Holzer and realizing, oh, ghosts are real. Like monsters are real. We need to go and take this a little more seriously. I mean, how seriously can you take it when you're 14?
Yeah.
But you at least are interested. Mm-hmm. And so that was like X-Files was on TV.
I mean, 14 is when I really got into acting. So like it's a very influential age.
And look, it ruined all of our lives.
I know.
One thing I love about this, One thing I love about sort of this paranormal thing, and I think you guys can speak to this too, is that literature plays such an important part. I mean, all of your fans and your museum members, they seem like such big readers. And why do you think that is? Why do you think people who are interested in this stuff are constantly having to search out different authors? And why are books so important in this field?
It's a hunger for knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
It's, you know, the unexplained. Somebody wants it explained to them. And we always joke about how Hellier is a show about reading books, because it really is. Mm-hmm. It's just book recommendations here and here and here and here. And that's why that's the thing that I love about this subject matter is there's no shortage of things to read. There's no shortage of new ideas. And take your pick. And there's plenty to pull from. And the more that you read, especially the more you read stuff that's varied, the more you can kind of put together your own picture of maybe what's going on. And I think that's why people, I hope they like to read. And we're always trying to get people to.
I think it's a nice thing. I mean, at the end of the day, it really gives people the confidence to start coming up with their own theories about things. And I think that paranormal TV is great, and it really does bring people to the subject matter in really big ways. You can bring a huge audience of people in to kind of take in the content. But once you start really going out and reading, authors that you like or reading about subjects that you like, you can start to form your own theories, and it really breaks you out of that kind of box that you can find yourself in if you're just consuming kind of paranormal television. It's nice to have a balance of both, because then you're allowed to kind of bring creativity into it, and you don't feel like, oh, I have to use this tool or I have to do things this way. It really gives you that confidence to just go for it and really start coming up with your own ideas.
It's a lot like music, isn't it, Riley? That's kind of what it reminds me of, like getting into like, oh, I got into this band and then this opened the door to this band, or, you know.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, everybody hits their Pandora's box, you know, and I think music and the paranormal overlap. I mean, like for like getting into like Led Zeppelin and the Rolling Stones and their love of the occult and all these things. And that's actually what opened a lot of doors for me into the paranormal. So that was, you know, there is a lot of overlap there. And it's a thirst for knowledge. It's a thirst to engage with something larger than yourself, you know, and you can do that through witchcraft or through music or through making a ridiculous podcast.
I think that's the thing that really appeals to me about this. And I still shy away from it, honestly, like in a very big way that I think if, you know, as we're heading into the beginning of the fourth year of this podcast, like I'm going to have to like confront at some point. But there's that interactive nature to this, like the thing that I love about like the occult and just the phenomenon in general and these books is it does sort of ask you to participate in it, which I feel like you guys obviously are doing in the work that you do, that Bryce and Riley and I are inspired by when we read books like, you know, The Mothman Prophecies, you know, just that sort of, there's that romantic idea of like boots to the ground investigation, getting there and going out and searching. And it's been really fun to watch Bryce manifest that with Expedition Bigfoot. I mean, I have to feel like maybe I don't know, not to make this about us, but
please,
like,
please,
but
we would never.
it is so weird to me still. And I'm interested on your take, and maybe people can listening at home might apply this to things in their projects in their own life, that like, you know, within a year and a half of us beginning this podcast called Bigfoot Collectors Club, Bryce is suddenly plucked and put into a show where he's literally being sent out to look for the cryptid.
That's amazing.
There seems to be you seem to have an easier way of manifestation when you have these tools at your hand. I mean, there's something about it. You know, we always talk about when you engage with this phenomenon, it seems to engage back with you. And I love how you guys say, you know, how important it is to come up with your own hypotheses and theories. And I think that this phenomenon begs that of the participant. It says, what have you got? You know, figure me out. You know, mm-hmm. You seem to be a great mind for this, you know, come play with us, you know? And, yeah. I don't know what my question is, Michael, but yeah, there's something about that, you know?
I'm interested on Greg and Dana's thoughts, like how it all sorts of, without this podcast, I don't know if we would have found you guys and other people that are in this. It all seems to build on one another.
I have a couple thoughts, and I think the first one is the paranormal is a subjective experience. Mm-hmm. It's something that, you know, you can have two people standing right next to each other and they can experience a very different event, a very different interpretation of an event. But I think, and that causes a problem for studying it and trying to figure it out and solving it, which I don't think we'll ever do, but I don't think that's the point. I think the point is to experience the paranormal, which is a subjective thing. You have to subject yourself to it. It's why a lot of hardcore skeptics who refuse to even leave the possibility of something like that, they don't experience anything because they won't actually give themselves over to it. And I really do think the longer we do this, the more the paranormal in all its forms, whatever you want to call it, the phenomenon, whatever, it needs us to invest in it for it to manifest. It has to have some give and take for you to experience it. And if you refuse to give, you're not going to get anything in return, which I think is a double-edged sword, because we all know people who go a little too over the deep end. You know, we see it with Hellier. Does this weird thing to people, and there's some people who just take it a little too far, and they just go, they're just nuts. We're on the verge of doing that a lot of the time. And so it's a bit of a game of tug of war, trying to figure out where that middle ground is so that you can get that engagement back by giving a little bit.
I think the way that I always look at it, and it's not even really looking at the way that I feel about it, and is this idea that what we're experiencing is it's really a current. It's a current that's pulling us through. And I think that current really works because of resonance. So when we become in line with it, we become part of the current and we get pulled into it. Mm. And it's as if that process activates us. And then because we're in resonance with it, we start to draw more of it towards us because it's like attracts like. It wants to be with you. So that sense of kind of give and take, that sense of play, I think play is the most important part. It's really playing with it. Like you said, you know, engaging with it and recognizing that there is sort of a dance happening. There's a bit of a give and take, but it's all because we're in that current of resonance with it. And so people who do tend to be really skeptical, it's as if they can't get into the current. They can't align with it because they're just not in the same kind of resonance. And so I like thinking of it in that way. And it feels right, at least as far as Hellier goes, to sort of think about it in that way, that it's really just this beautiful current that you're kind of just being pulled into.
Yeah. I like that idea. Beautifully said. And that idea of play makes so much sense to Bryce and I as actors and Riley as a musician, that we know that there's a moment when you're in the flow that you're engaging with, even with another physical person on stage. There seems to be another sort of intelligence coming through behind that in art as well. Mm-hmm. So I really dig that. To wrap up the paranormal, personal paranormal history stuff, can you guys pinpoint for each of you the moment when you felt like you knocked and it knocked back? Is there a moment when you went, oh, I mean, Greg, you were sort of alluding to it about that night in the graveyard when something happened. What was the moment that made the lights go on for you when you were like, okay, something's going on?
I mean, for me, I think that was the first point, was the night in Barclay Cemetery, Barclay Mountain Cemetery. We had driven out there. It's a tiny little cemetery in the middle of nowhere on top of a mountain. It's the only thing that's left of an old ghost town, mining town, miles from civilization. And this was like right after we had gone and started LARPing. And we had gone there without anyone hiding, without anyone scaring us. And we started to get, like, there was maybe six or seven of us, and we were getting hit with these, like something was poking us, jabbing us, like something was throwing stuff at us. And then we find out that it was little bits of coal. They were little tiny pieces of coal, and it was an old mining cemetery. And I still have, actually, I think it's right there. I still have that piece of coal, that one thing that, like, really set everything in motion for me. I picked it up and I said, I'm taking this home. And then that was it. When I was like, something is speaking to us from somewhere else. I thought it was ghosts, you know, dead people then, but my opinions have changed a lot. But that, I think, was the moment for me.
Maybe it's Indrid Cole. Without the D. Oh, little hellier humor.
Maybe.
It was an early
It's all connected, man. It's all connected. Trace it back.
That joke is for this audience and this audience only.
He knows how to read a room, you know?
Yeah. I think that for me, probably, I definitely had many experiences leading up to this experience, but this was the one that I think was undeniable. And it was something, for me, it was undeniable because it happened very early in my time investigating the paranormal. And it also happened in front of a really big group of people, which at the time for me was very important, I think, you know, to sort of be willing to believe that this kind of stuff was happening. And it happened when we were filming the last episode of Girly Ghost Hunters, which was at a location in Ontario, in Castor, Ontario, called the Hermitage. And it's an old abandoned mansion that had burned down a few times. And there were lots of stories. We were investigating this location, and there's lots of kind of local legends and ghost stories about the woman who lived there having had experiences, you know, coming back and scaring people off the property. And it's a very kind of isolated place. You have to walk a mile through the woods just to get to the ruins. So it was a perfect place for a TV ghost hunt. And we weren't really expecting anything too scary to happen. We had been there a few times and not really had that much activity. And this specific night, there had been a story that we had heard, and it's kind of a trope at this point, but usually when people – it normally happens when people haven't done any research. And usually you'll hear, it was a Native American burial ground, or it was just something that kind of gets clumped into that category. And so at that point, you know, we had heard that a few times from people, and we didn't really believe it. So it was a crew of maybe 15 people, and halfway through the investigation, I'm looking about 30 feet away from me, and in the woods that are about 30 feet away from me, and again, we're miles in the middle of nowhere, this seven and a half feet tall static creature or shape. It was like the outline of something with very long arms. And the way I describe it is it looked like an outline encased with like television static. And it literally walked out of the woods. So the it was dark, and the static movement kind of comes out of the woods. And as I'm looking at it and trying to like focus my eyes on it, I can see the definition of the arms. I can see that it has legs and that it's moving towards us. And then I see two more of them come out of the woods on either side. And these ones are a little bit smaller. And at this point, I'm realizing that all of the rest of the crew are all staring at the same thing. Like, we're all literally looking at it. So there, at this point where we were, there were seven or eight people watching this thing I don't know what it was. They seemed to come out of the woods and instantly felt as if they did not want us there because their body shape, like the way they were moving their body, it was as if they were trying to herd us off the property. And they were all these, like, again, it was like static from a TV, very dark static from a television encased in this bizarre humanoidish shape. And they came out. We obviously lost our crap. The crew were freaking out. Like, everyone was freaking out. And it was this moment of just kind of pure chaos where everyone, like, our paradigms were shifting. We couldn't understand what was happening. And then just as quickly as they came out of the woods, they went right back into the woods. And then we literally packed up all of our stuff and left. But that, for me, weird. I mean, happening in front of that many people and it being, to this day, still the most visual thing that I've really probably ever seen.
And
it was
pretty
incredible.
Greg just had a couple pieces of charcoal thrown at him.
Sorry, dude.
Like I said, not that interesting.
She wins again.
For the win.
That is wild. And I'm sure you guys know, because we've gotten letters from, we do L-Files episodes here on the show, BigfootCollectorsClub@gmail.com. If you got a story like Dana's or Greg's, send it to us. But we hear these stories of static. They're almost like shadow creatures, but they're these static men or static creatures that show up sometimes in people's bedrooms. What the fuck is that, Dana? What do you think that is?
The only thing that I've ever really been able to kind of come to any conclusion on was a sense that it had to have been some kind of an elemental or something that was land-based, I think protecting the land, because it had a very animal kind of energy to it. Like, I remember very distinctly it was hunched over and it was kind of like stalking us. And it had its sights on us and it knew that it didn't want us on the property. And the other two seemed to be just sort of flanking it, like helping to guide us off the property. But it was this sense of, it did not want us there. We were doing something that I don't think it wanted us to be doing. So, and it felt very land-based and kind of very, it felt like it was non-human, like it had never been human. There was something very kind of primordial about it almost.
Yeah, did everyone that see it see the same version of it? Like, did everyone see the same thing or did it present differently to the different viewers?
It looked, as far as everyone's descriptions, kind of in the moment, because it was being, obviously it's the final episode of Girly Ghost Hunters, and in the moment we're all kind of saying the same thing, like, do you see the shadow thing, and the craziest part about it, and it's so frustrating, is the cameraman had it on camera. He could see it in his viewfinder, but when they played the tape back, there was nothing there, but he could see it, like he could actually see it. And but we were all kind of describing the same thing, because the way that it was moving and the way that it was kind of coming towards us, I mean, we were all reacting to it. So everyone was, again, it was kind of like a moment of pure chaos where everyone just couldn't figure out what was happening at that point. Cause we were sort of really taken off guard thinking it was going to be a chill night. And like the shadow monster people decided that it wasn't going to be chill at all.
Nah. I don't like it. I don't like it. Also, you can blame that static man for why you only had one season.
Exactly.
He had showed up on camera.
Yeah. He should have showed up at the beginning of the season, not the end of
the
season.
Fuck shadow man. Come on.
Don't say that. He's going to show up in our bedroom later. God. He'll be like, it's my revenge.
All right. Well, we're going to get into more of your paranormal investigations that you guys have done, but it's time for a game that we all like to play with all of our guests. I'm going to go down a list of phenomenon and rapid fire style. And if you're open to it, you're going to say, believe it. If you're not, you're going to say bullshit. This is a game that we like to call Bullshit
or Believe It.
I love the sound effects.
Greg and Dana Newkirk, are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
On your mark.
Oh, God.
Get set. Ghosts.
Believe it.
UFOs.
Believe it.
Bigfoot.
Believe it.
Alien Grays.
Believe it.
Great.
Half of them. Can I be like in the middle?
Dana, you are instinctively playing this game correctly. I love it.
Yes.
Out of body experiences.
Believe it.
Demonic possession.
poorly defined.
But good answer.
Believe it, but poorly defined.
You only have two choices, Greg.
Bullshit. 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 Bullshit.
Right there.
Greg. Bullshit.
There you go.
The Bermuda Triangle.
Ooh.
As much as I want to, it's bullshit.
I
want to
say bullshit.
Alien abductions.
Believe it.
Believe it.
Loch Ness Monster.
Believe it.
I want it to be real, but I'm going to say bullshit.
Time travel.
We talking physical?
Whatever interests you, baby.
Believe it. I'm going to say believe it.
I'm going to say believe it. All right, believe it.
Reincarnation.
Believe it.
ESP. Bullshit. Oh, shit. Sorry. Tell my friend Grace Mitchell to keep it down because we're playing bullshit or believe it.
It's a serious business.
She's a friend of the friend
Unless
of the show.
Unless she wants to jump on the game, she's got to get out. All right, here we go.
Calls to take. All right.
Sorry, I'm going to go reincarnation again. Reincarnation.
Believe it.
Bullshit.
ESP.
Believe it.
Haunted houses.
Believe it.
Believe it.
The Illuminati.
Bullshit.
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 There's a face on Mars.
Bullshit.
Skunk ape.
Believe it.
Sea serpents.
Believe it.
Bullshit.
Poltergeists.
Believe it.
Chupacabra.
Bullshit.
Atlantis.
Believe
bullshit.
It.
Bullshit.
Will you believe that?
I want to believe it. I want to believe it.
An alien spacecraft crashed at Roswell or bullshit. Corona.
Bullshit. Yeah.
Bullshit.
Ooh, we might have to circle back. Heaven.
bullshit.
Believe it.
Bullshit.
Like the? Are we talking like gates of that kind of thing?
Whatever it means to you.
Heaven's believe so tacky, it. Dude. Believe it. No way. Bullshit. Pearly That's gates.
That of course leads me to the next one, which is hell.
Bullshit. Nice. Nice.
Life on other planets.
Believe it.
Believe it.
Parallel dimensions.
Believe it.
The apocalypse.
Ooh, bullshit. I don't want to believe it, but. Kind of bullshit.
Life after death.
Believe it.
Goblins.
Believe it. You better believe it. Oh, he's going to say bullshit. No, he's not.
Believe it.
It's going to be difficult.
Wow, the Newkirk survived bullshit or believe it. I have to Amazing. Say, that was fascinating to
Informative.
Me.
Informative. Yeah.
All right, let's go. A couple notes here. I like the points of contention. One of them was Atlantis.
Mm.
Want to unpack that?
I love the idea of lost civilizations. I just sure. love the idea. You know, I love every time we go to Mount Shasta, I'm like, Lemuria, it's in there. Like, I love the idea of lost civilizations. So there's part of me that just really wants to believe that, really wants to just believe it.
Yeah, I just think it's tacky. I'm just not into it. I think it's just too cheesy for me.
I get it. I get that. A lot of the new agey.
There's a lot of new agey stuff. But
yeah, a lot of that can feel a little cheesy to me. Although, you know, if I were confronted with it in real life, I'd probably be like, this feels great. I got to be honest. And then
just don't try to buy Lemurian crystals at Contact in the Desert. You may
you get ripped off.
You may get shunned.
Okay. No.
We tried to interview him. He would not do it. He had a great
out of here with that technology, man.
And a great hat.
You're not ready for this.
I'm curious what you guys think poltergeists are.
I think we probably are on the same page. I mean, really, one of the most fascinating things I think about a lot of poltergeist cases is looking into children that are in the home. But usually it's happening around kids going through puberty, and that seems to be a really big caveat to that those huge bursts of kind of psychokinetic energy that seems to happen around poltergeists. You know, like I think the most probably famous poltergeist case would be like the Enfield poltergeist. And the Enfield poltergeist case happened to a huge, you know, family of teenage girls. And a lot of the activity was happening while they were going through puberty. So it seems to be, at least I think, a huge factor in that massive burst of poltergeist and psychokinetic energy.
I think that stuff is all, you know, that idea of liminality and marginality. And
yeah,
I think that, you know, it's not just, I think we give it the name Poltergeist, but I think it's a lot of different stuff. I think it's, you know, phantom Bigfoots and alien abduction phenomena and things like that typically happen to people in a middle state, in a place in between houses that are half built or under construction, trailer parks, and you know the definition of a liminal space to live. It's a house that's on wheels, like all these bridges, borders, bodies of water, all mm-hmm. kinds of places like that. So I think that, you know, when it comes to poltergeists, you see poltergeists happen in families that are in turmoil or in a stage of transition. You know, maybe somebody just died, or kids going through puberty.
Yeah. I mean, puberty itself is like a liminal state.
Absolutely.
You're not an adult and you're not a child. So you're in that weird space in the in-between.
Absolutely. So I think that poltergeist activity is just an offshoot of that weird state of existence.
You know, one of the things that I think about too, when you bring up poltergeist, is the Bell Witch, which also I thought of when you were talking about ancient elementals, because the Bell Witch is one of those crossovers where it feels like that was a household with, you know, a lot of teenagers, and it was also on like old land that I forget the patriarchal name of the family, but that they probably, you know, there's that old cave that's, I always feel like the Bell Witch was there for a long time. So I'm not sure which is which, but there is some sort of crossover there maybe.
Well, you got a cave, which is it's a liminal space. It's half in, half out.
Good point. The caves, it always comes back to the caves. And finally, Roswell, it's not an alien spacecraft. Do you think it's bullshit?
I mean, I'm more apt to believe these days that it was some sort of government.
That's what I craft. Think, maybe.
I think that's. I think
something definitely crashed there, but sure. I don't know if it was extraterrestrial.
I don't buy the nuts and bolts thing anymore, man. Like, it's so hard. I think the more, that's part of the deal with reading and actually being boots on the ground, is you start to really rethink a lot of the traditional narratives of these types of stories. And I think UFOs, piloted by some intelligence are real, but I don't necessarily think they're nuts and bolts.
Well, that's a perfect segue into our next segment, which for you guys tonight. Now, typically we do a story of high strangeness where Bryce or I will bring a story like the Bell Witch or the Roswell and sort of present it for the guest. But when we have two people on, such as yourselves, we gotta eschew us just telling you a story you've probably heard a million times and talk to you about your own experiences. And Riley, do you need to queue up for this one?
Oh, we're ready, baby.
High strangeness. Let's talk about high strangeness, you guys. That's a term that we throw around a lot on our show. It's the name of a segment. I hear it more and more out there. When we actually started the show 3 years ago, it was sort of a kind of like underground phrase that like not a lot of people maybe necessarily knew about.
Oh, but, hipsters.
I hear it. We hear it all the time. I feel like we're hearing it more and more. So what does the term high strangeness mean to you guys?
Go ahead.
To me, it means more. I think it's just more of an all-encompassing phrase than just saying the paranormal. When you hear paranormal, I think most people think ghosts, you know? So I think a high strangeness to me is just anything that seems out of the ordinary.
Yeah, I think that's a good way. It's sort of like a catch-all, really, for all of it, I think. And it's sort of that space where you do find the crossover, and there's so much of it. And, we've talked about this a lot, but the idea that within the paranormal community, there's a lot of kind of compartmentalizing of interests, and there isn't a lot of crossover. So a lot of Bigfoot people will not necessarily be interested in ghosts. And but when you sit down with people that, you know, are more interested in other things, you do find that crossover. And I think it's that crossover where a lot of that high strangeness likes to hang out.
And do you, this nuts and bolts thing versus the, I don't know, what is it, psychic projection, something from another dimension?
Mass consciousness.
Yeah, because you guys have been engaging with something on the other side, it feels like, in your investigation during Hellier. It's funny because I think it's hard for some of us to discount the idea that there that these physical manifestations aren't something from our own reality.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you, oh, Bryce, I think we lost your sound there, buddy. Sorry, everybody. Stand by, because I know he's going to have something to say about this.
Uh-oh. No, he does.
They're silencing him.
Yeah, he's too close to the truth.
That's it. He was about ready to reveal the secrets.
They're shutting you down.
Here, Bryce, I'll just fill in your words here.
Maybe we kick him out and we bring him back in. Should we kick him out?
Okay, there we go.
See, you just needed the beep boops.
It was just a simple mute button.
No, you muted yourself there. Before.
I don't know. I was having trouble with the cam and the
beard. 3 years.
Going strong.
I mean, I was just going to say, you know, famed psychologist Carl Jung had no problem with psychic manifestation taking on physical property. So I think those worlds can collide when it's like even something is opaque as consciousness. It can, I think, hold physical weight, for lack of a better term. So, I mean, maybe those things can somehow be connected.
100%. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it just seems like the natural end goal to solving a lot of the problems that people have with different paranormal things is the idea that somehow our consciousness is linked to this. And we're, again, like I said earlier, I think it needs us to interact with it. It needs us to play with it in order for it to manifest. And you see that we're sort of the catalyst for a lot of these things that people are experiencing. And I don't think that you can separate any of the physical experiences from the paranormal experiences.
So is it something that is coming out of your brains, Greg and Dana, that's trying to manifest itself? Or is it like we've talked about, maybe like it requires the user to manifest? You know what I mean? Like if I see a UFO, let's go with this, and I see a glowing orb in the sky or a flying saucer, and it's just me. Is that coming out of my subconscious and projecting itself into sort of a waking dream? Or was that a entity that's hanging around and it needed my brain waves to make contact?
I don't see why it can't be both.
I think it's both. Yeah. What? I think it can be.
I mean, truly.
I think it can be both.
I mean, think about, you know, it was Jung, right, who even believed that UFOs were manifestations of an unhealthy mass consciousness. Yeah. And so I think that can be, well, and think about what's huge right now. UFOs are huge again. Yeah. We're going through lots of turmoil.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of experiences, so let's use the Ouija board, for example, right? Skeptics like to write it off and say it's the ideomotor effect. These can't be messages from anything. It's the ideomotor effect. Yes, I think so. When people say like, oh, it's all in your head, I think that's true. I just think that these things need us to communicate because we're the easiest tool for them to use, whether it's just tweaking that part of our brain that's the smell of a loved one that we lost, that maybe the intelligence still exists somewhere. They can make us smell them to know that they're around. That smell's not really there, but we can smell it because we know the memory of it. So I think that there's an element of that happening with a lot of the paranormal experiences that people have is their brain.
So what you're
catalyst.
Saying essentially is if you smelt it, you did dealt it.
You did, in fact.
Something else dealt it.
So. Yeah, right. Come on, keep on, Michael. Greg and Dana.
Saying, if it's coming from you, you must be the one.
I have a question. What is it like being full-time professional paranormalists? I mean, is it all sex and UFO cults? Michael wrote that. But
Say cult. I just said, is it all sex and UFO?
Oh, yeah, right. I had that. But what's it like? I mean, you know, there's not a lot of you guys doing this full-time on the day-to-day. Can you give us just a glimpse into what that's actually like?
Oh, God. It's super depressing, really.
really.
We definitely live in a bit
None of our family members are proud of us.
We live in a bit of a vacuum, and I think forget how actually weird we are until we say something in front of someone who's relatively normal, and they look at you like, "What did that person just say?" And I'm like, "I thought that was normal." I think that's kind of fun, actually, to be perfectly honest.
It's a weird thing of like walking this line where you're trying to maintain some sense of normality when you're answering emails to people who are seeing goblins or have UFOs abducting them. It's tough to go from that, then go to, politics.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's difficult.
It's a good, I think, at least I think for us anyway, it's a good exercise in staying grounded and balanced, because I think for us to be useful in this space, we do, like Greg's all the time, he constantly talks about being on the fence and being kind of between and being in that space where we can recognize one side and recognize the other and not getting too pulled into one side or the other, because we can't be good investigators if we're too far over here or too far over here. So it's a constant exercise of making sure that we're staying somewhere in the middle, because it's very easy. I mean, you look at a lot of the older iconic investigators, and then later in their lives, they do get kind of pulled into it, and we lose a lot of them to what, you know, could be really unhealthy ways of living. And so it's kind of, again, like I said, it's just sort of a constant staying balanced.
It's gotta be. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say on a practical level, it's not an easy lifestyle, because, you know, there's people that ask us this question, like, how do we do what you do? How can I be like a full-time weirdo? Well, like, you know, not a great health plan.
Yeah, right.
No, you can't. I mean, it's we don't have kids. We live a very minimal lifestyle. We live in a, you know, 2-bedroom apartment that's really cheap, and we live.
I mean, so far you've just described my life as an actor,
but that's a non-traditional, non-traditional life.
Successful actor in Hollywood. You guys, we're doing the same fucking thing.
I'm feeling the same way about being a musician. Yeah,
it's great, but that's it, right? It's a non-traditional. You make a lot of sacrifices to live a non-traditional lifestyle.
What is it that Gordon White says that you have to about? True magic is
stored optionality. Mm. You guys as musicians and as actors, you guys know all
creatives
about stored optionality
in general. Yeah.
True magic is the ability to live so simply that you can do whatever you want when you want to.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's magic.
Yeah. And you're manifesting and living in resonance with that idea that those types of experiences can come to you because you have that stored optionality, because you can kind of go and do them, and you can go. Whereas if someone who had kids or different types of responsibilities, they can't just go, I'm going to go shoot a pilot that could get picked up right now. I'm going to drop everything and go and shoot it. And that's not a lifestyle for everyone.
Or I'm going to go on the road and play music for 6 months.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? True magic is the ability to say yes.
I love that.
Whenever
vowed after like selling that 800 numbers that I was going to store lots of optionality, and so yeah,
there you go.
I gotta think it's gotta be nice to have you two to keep yourselves in check, because I remember reading Grant Morrison talking about how, you know, sure, you can call up gods, you can get into this stuff, but like, you still have to pay your bills at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And there's even moments in Hellier, which, you know, there are times as someone who loves the show and who loves you guys, and I start to question, okay, are they just getting excited about like a couple numbers on a street address? Are they jumping too far in, or is there something in this synchronicity as someone who buys into that myself? You know, so it's nice. It's always nice when I hear you guys go, all right, wait a minute, maybe we're just freaking ourselves out here.
Yeah. I mean, the nice thing with Hellier specifically is there's a big enough group of us that if one person starts to, and we will all at certain points in time, and we have gotten a little too close to that side where you start feeling not necessarily excitable about everything, but that idea that you're kind of becoming less about one side, or less about the middle and more one the other. There's enough of us that we'll pull each other back. And that's the nice thing is, you know, when somebody starts getting a little too weird about something or a little too obsessed with something, there's a handful of other people there that'll pull each other back.
What was that moment for you guys each? Can you remember a moment where you're like, fuck, dude, I need you to like chill me out right now?
I mean, I do really well with all of the paranormal stuff, like the magic and the all that stuff. I'm fine with that. I like living in that world, and I think I can navigate it well. But it's when we start getting into the very scary human stuff.
Yeah.
When it's like, you know, people talking about local murders and people talking about, you know, cults and things like that. Drug trafficking, human trafficking. And I'm not like lizard people, baby brain drinking type stuff.
But close.
You know, the stuff that all of that's based on, mm-hmm. the real stuff. Corruption, that stuff freaks me out. And then just unhinged, like people who are a little off kilter. Because people are always way scarier to me than any monster ever. Because you don't, I mean, I don't know too many people who've been hurt by a ghost. Like really hurt.
Right.
People, on the other hand, mm-hmm. that's a whole other story. So when we got to that stuff, and even still, I mean, there's a lot of real weirdos when it comes to Hellier who, I mean, we've had people drive by our house real slow. Mm-hmm. We've had people like find our phone numbers and call us at all hours of the night.
I mean, we've had death threats.
Wow.
Stalkers. Which is super weird. It's a show about goblins.
Yeah.
Seriously. And we've gotten like death threats from it. Like people literally threatening to kidnap us.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's It is a thing, too, where you're sort of like, I think as the shows progress, sort of putting on for, you know, for me, it's sort of a very strong, especially season two, strong example of sort of like, even though it seems to be that maybe you guys are being pulled into some ritual, like, I feel like you guys are practicing some real practical, for lack of a better term, practical magic in this, where you're like, okay, we have intention, we have will, we're trying to bring about a result, but then you're gonna get these hangers on that want to come in and play a part in the narrative that they think they're playing, and that is scary. That totally, and those were the scary parts of it. It's that I loved the folklorist that you had open the Phenomenacon today. What was
Phenomenacon was taken, so we had to add an extra syllable in there.
Who was the woman who was Dr.
Kida. Andrea Kida.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And awesome. I love the idea that like we're sort of almost reliving this moment of the 1980s satanic panic now.
Yes.
Where everyone's scared about occultists and like kids being in
danger.
Well,
you guys, the Hollywood elite, you guys are out there drinking
brains. Right, exactly. That's true. That's what we do. You know. When we're not Riley. Oh.
Fresh Andritochrome.
So as a team, you guys have like promoted or encouraged unconventional methods in your investigations, like using hypnosis to induce an alien abduction in the second season of Hellier that state. What's the thought process behind your non-traditional approach to investigating the phenomenon?
The map is not the territory.
Yeah.
The map only shows you the edge of however far you can get.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go any further if you're just following the map. So you have to try new stuff.
Yeah, it's sort of this visual of being you can either hike the path that's been hiked a million times, or you can carve your own way through. And I think, you know, the fun part about that is if you're a person who's okay with failing, sometimes it doesn't work and sometimes it's just completely a waste of time, but at least you've tried it. And again, it's that idea of, I think really one of the things that we're always thinking about is just how can we approach this creatively? Like what could potentially open up a new pathway for us? So we're just sort of throwing it all at the process and seeing what fits. And sometimes it doesn't. Obviously we document a lot of our dead ends and sometimes stuff will work and sometimes it won't. But I think it's that idea again of like play. You want to play and introducing fun, creative ways of maybe approaching some of this stuff. It gives you that feeling of kind of engaging. And I do find that we fall into the current a lot more when we do stuff like that.
It's a cool way of getting results. I love that you guys sort of are the clarion call for like, hey, Bigfoot enthusiasts, ghost people, let's work together to figure out what the hell this shit is.
100%. I think if we started to do that, we'd realize that there's so much more in common between all of these fields. And I mean, I've said it a million times, but I think it's just human nature that everybody who believes something that might be seen as weird wants someone who's a little weirder than them. So, yeah, I mean, hey, I believe in a big hairy monster in the forest, but at least I'm not that guy getting probed in the butt by aliens, you know, that type of thing.
You know, so speaking of the big hairy monster,
that's fun for some of us.
Hey, you know, you know, when we were first talking about names for the show of this podcast, we one of the first names we liked was Bigfoot is a Ghost. But Greg, you're really the first one to ever sort of posit that idea that Bigfoot might be a ghost. What led you to that? And are you still there today?
I don't think I am the first person to posit that. Okay. I think there's a lot of people who have had that idea. I think one of the things I think I'm good at is just taking ideas that are very hard to boil down and just be like, well, Bigfoot is a topic thought form. Mm-hmm.
What's your elevator pitch?
Whatever.
Of that?
It's like, no, the elevator pitch is Bigfoot's a ghost.
Yeah.
Right.
Because that one gets it right into somebody's head real fast. So I think people have known this for a long time. I mean, I see you're reading Where the Footprints End.
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, his idea that, you know, poltergeist, we think about poltergeist and that's something we think of indoors and usually around people, whereas the Bigfoot is almost like an outdoors poltergeist, something mm-hmm. he quoted as a wilderness geist. And I just, absolutely. I love that idea. And it's like, it's hard to go back to, just like the nuts and bolts, it's hard to go back to Bigfoot is just an unconfirmed North American wood ape, a flesh and blood creature. Right. It's like, I can't get there again. You know, it's once that door's closed, it's hard to go back in it, you know?
And I don't know if you guys, Greg and Dana, if you guys have seen Expedition Bigfoot, but I actually think that it follows in the steps of Hellier in a few ways, which is, you know, you guys go out there, Bryce, and with one expectation, and then the woods goes, no, fuck you. This is what we're going to do. Well, and you have guys, not Ronnie. Ronnie's a little bit open-minded, but the sorry, what's the other dude's name?
Russell.
Russell seeing orbs, and you know, and the whole thing ends up leading to a cave at the end of the day.
Even Maria hearing children's laughter in the night, you know. And speaking of this, no, not a lot of people know this, but when we were first developing that show, I sent the creatives Hellier, and I was like, "Watch this,
dude!"
This
is,
and they were like, "Oh, okay, we're lighting this all different now."
I had talks. I talked to one of your showrunners because amazing. One of your showrunners is really good friends with a friend of mine.
Oh, that's wild.
And so, like, there's overlap everywhere.
That's wild.
It's crazy. Yeah.
I was I was just like, this is the best paranormal television I've ever seen. If we can even, like, emulate this, you know.
You guys might be behind bringing this all together in some Morgan. Melting pot.
Chaos magic.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so last question for you guys in the high strangeness, and then we got one last segment before we wrap up. I know you guys are very tired, but on Bigfoot Collectors Club, we collect stories and experiences, but you guys actually collect haunted artifacts. And I'm very curious to know, what are each of your favorite collector's items in the collection? Oh. Is there one thing that you're like, hard. I could get rid of all this, but this needs to stay?
I mean, we have, I don't know.
The trouble is, we it's like the way that we view a lot of it is when we get something that we truly do think there's something stranger to, we don't really see ourselves as collecting it so much as caring for it.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of things that we have that have their own weird quirks. It's strange to say, but some of them don't get along. They have to be stored separately. Some of them don't seem to like one of us or each of us. And some of them, like, there's one we had to take back.
Yeah.
We had to take it back to a cave in the Catskill Mountains. We did that 2 years ago. Because the people who sent it to us...
I think I saw... Did you guys make a video of this? Did you
so
make
we
it?
we've been working on a documentary with Carl. It was the, like a follow-up to between like Hellier stuff, which eventually will be out. We're supposed to go shoot some more of it, but it's, we called it the Crone, and it's this little item that has nails in the eyes and a noose around its neck. And that one, I think that one's, think no offense, Billy, but that one I think is my favorite just because it is a really great indication of the type of work that we're always trying to do. Because one of the things we did is we grabbed Tyler, who saw in Hellier, because he's a special effects makeup artist. And so he was able to figure out how to actually make a mold of this thing so that we could still have something in the collection to talk about the story and yet return it. So we spent
return it to the woods, not the people.
We spent a day. We had to hike miles, like 8 miles up into the mountains. We took a heater that wasn't even for us. It was for the mold to set up. Dana set a big circle, and we did this ritual with like 100 witches from around the world at the same time in unison. Pulled the nails out. Pulled the noose off. Crazy shit going on all around us, like trying to get us to stop. I mean, people were getting like, they were getting choked around this thing. There were car accidents happening.
Oh my
God, craziest thing I saw was watching a conference. We were in a big conference room.
This was actually the last time that we brought, if you're talking about the same, the last time that we brought this object out into the general public. That after this experience, we were like, we can never bring this out again.
That was what made us realize we have to take this thing back. We can't in good conscience hang on to this thing. We were, at this point now, we were already weird and dicey about it. We'd seen weird things in our house, found wet footprints in our house. Television almost dropped on my head.
Yeah, we had it in a box and we just wouldn't open the box. So if it came to that event, usually it would never come out of the box.
So we went to this event and we always feel it out.
I was like, this is too much, man.
We always would feel the event out because there's some events we'd go to where like the crowd just wasn't right. Like, you know the type, dude bros yelling at ghosts. That's not the type of people we want this thing around.
Mm-hmm.
We were feeling a little funky about it. We weren't going to bring her out.
Yeah,
and then somebody had driven like 8 hours or something to come see our display, and they were specifically interested in the Crone.
And it was when a lecture was happening, so it was very quiet in the room. So we sort of, I think I could see Greg kind of weighing up the pros and cons, and he was like, fine. You know, there wasn't that many people in the room at the time, so it should be okay.
Unlock the box, pull her out of the box, still in the pillowcase she was sent in, and just sort of like held her there. And it almost immediately after that happened, this weird, for lack of a better word, force just shot down the conference hall.
Sonic boom. Like it just went.
Wow.
The lights started swinging. The person in, I won't say their name, but they were across from us. Fairly big personality.
Shakira, it's fine.
Shakira.
We all know.
her bottles of soda popped.
Exploded.
Wow.
And sprayed all over her books and destroyed all of her merch.
This is something
screaming out
of Indiana Jones.
It was unreal.
It was insane. I've never seen anything like this. She starts screaming and growling like an animal. It was really weird.
Oh my God.
And then, like, you could just sort of see the ripple go all the way down the conference hall.
Yeah, like the lights were swinging down that
People were, like,
aisle.
Looking around to see what was going on. And then this dude, halfway down the hall, rolls his head back. His eyes roll back in his head. And he just starts bleeding out of his mouth. And has
no.
Come on.
Yeah.
There's witnesses to all of this.
He had a seizure.
Had a seizure.
And it was, like, right when the box was open.
And
was,
the guy who asked us to open the box started crying and said, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Put it back. You were right. Put it back. And that was the day we said, we got to get rid of this thing.
Wow.
So that's my favorite, just because we were able to take it back, stop what was happening, and still have a representation of this thing that's 1-1 museum quality to show for all of the effort.
Fuck.
Any weird activity from the carbon copy?
No.
No.
Nope. We still have the nails and the noose, but those are locked up. Those are the only things we have. And I wouldn't be surprised if there'd be some weird stuff around them
for sure.
We did some things with them.
Jeez, Louise.
I hope Dana, that answered your question, Michael.
Damn.
That answered half of my question, unfortunately. Dana, anything to add?
I mean, I think I can probably go on the other side of the spectrum. We have an object in the museum that sort of internally we refer to as Billy. And Billy is a...
I know who Billy is.
Yeah,
I did too. Great.
Billy is a Kisi figure from the Central Congo. And when we first were given Billy, we had a lot of very scary activity around, you know, around him, and a lot of scary EVPs. And people had, they experienced a lot of kind of frightening things. And it... Billy's kind of a really beautiful example of the way that we approach a lot of the objects that we're given. And really, at the end of the day, what we're always trying to figure out is why is this object active? And at the end of the day, if we can discover that there's some kind of an intelligence attached to it that is capable of communication, or just an intelligence in general, we have some kind of a responsibility at that point to find some resolution for this, because we're talking about something that's an intelligent energy or an intelligent entity. And so Billy is a really great example of that, where in the beginning, initially, people were having scary experiences, and it was a mixture between, obviously this was over the course of a few years, but real actual research and working with people that are much smarter than we are, archaeologists and you know, people that could actually kind of lead us to the final conclusion and discovering what Billy actually was, which is this really beautiful idol that would have been used in the Congo for spirit communication, to communicate with the gods, to communicate with the land. And so Billy was this very fascinating in between. And what we were experiencing initially with him was sort of him getting used to us too. And so it was a process, and it's such a great example, I think, because so often in the paranormal, specifically the ghost hunting world, the word demon gets thrown around a lot. And if one thing that we as living people kind of perceive as being negative or scary, like scratches or hair pulling, most of the time people will kind of jump instantly on the it's evil or it's a demon kind of train. And it was a great example of pushing through that fear and really relying on actual research to guide you towards the actual conclusion, which was this object wasn't evil or anything like that. It was that we needed to understand what Billy was. And so, you know, that again happened over the course of many, many years. And he's just sort of this really wonderful, beautiful example of what can happen when you research things the right way and not instantly go like demons.
Right. I love that. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I have to ask before we move on, November's coming up. Past couple of years, that was around the time when I would get a free show on my laptop called Hellier. any teas, anything? I'm sure you get this all the time. Do I have a Hellier 3 to look forward to this year?
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but Carl refuses to do a Zoom season of Hellier. So
that makes sense. Yeah, that tracks.
Mm-hmm. Photographers, what are you gonna do?
Carl,
that doesn't rule it out forever.
Yeah. No, I think at this point, I don't think it's a secret. This stuff isn't stopping. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's just growing, and I think. You know, I think part of that ego death is realizing that that story is bigger than us, mm-hmm. and realizing that it's tipped some dominoes. And sure. So we will return to it at some point.
Great. Great.
Hopefully sooner than later.
Great. All right. I know it's late. Do you guys have a time to play a quick party game with us?
Dude, yeah. I'm in. Like I said. Night.
All right, good.
Let's do it.
All right, cool.
I can't read, I don't see comments. I don't know if people are ready to go to bed, but we got a party game to wrap it up.
There's 270 people still.
Fantastic.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
That's four times our audience. So.
Not anymore. Not anymore.
There you go. All right.
All right.
So, Bryce, what do you got for us?
All right. Hold on.
Let's see if I have any mezcal left.
I've been keeping half an eye on the comments, and I gotta say, your guys' audience is hilarious and cool, and we
They're
love
best.
You guys. Yeah.
Oh right, Riley, we got a plaque for this one. We got slide for this one.
Let's hit it.
Time for the conspiracy game,
guys. It's Team Bigfoot, Michael and Riley versus Team Goblin, and we are gonna play the conspiracy game. This is from the conspiracy game from our friends at Netty Games. Now, I have five categories here: aliens, schemes, tech, mythos, and random. You guys will get to pick a category. I'll ask you a question, and if your team gets it right, you get 1 point. If your team gets the question wrong, the other team gets a chance to answer. Once a category has been correctly answered, it's no longer available. The first team to 5 points wins. We'll start with you, Greg and Dana.
Team Goblin.
Ooh. Team Goblin.
Okay.
Would you like me to repeat the categories?
Yes, or did
one
please.
Stick out?
Yeah,
okay,
your
categories are aliens, okay, schemes, tech, mythos, or random.
I'll let you pick.
Let's do mythos.
All right.
Mythos. Ooh. Here we go. Greg and Dana. In 2020, New Zealand cave explorers claimed that a reiki aura shield forced them to abandon their search for what artifact? Is it A, pieces of an alien spaceship? Is it B, a stargate? C, the tomb of the ancient one? Or D, skeletons of giant humanoids?
Oh, my God.
You can talk out loud. It's okay.
Can we?
Work it out out loud. You don't have to telepathically communicate.
So here's the thing. I don't know the answer to this one at all.
Okay.
But I want to rule. I want to rule some stuff out. I don't think it's aliens.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think that it's What was the other one?
B is Stargate.
I don't think it's Stargate.
C is Tomb of the Ancient One, or D is skeletons of giant humanoids.
I don't know why.
I want to say it's skeletons of giant humanoids.
Okay, I'm gonna go with you on that.
But why are you being pulled the other direction?
For some reason, I feel like Stargate is popping out of my head.
Really?
I mean,
that's because you're into Atlantis and shit like that.
Maybe. Listen, if I'm gonna go with you, but if I'm right, I'm gonna laugh in your face.
Okay.
As usual, this is our typical relationship dynamic. I'm gonna choose the wrong answer and then be
you know what
for it.
Dana, you did the right thing. Greg, you're right.
It's good.
Skeletons of giant humanoids.
I was going to fight for Stargate. I'm so pissed. I would have been. Dana, if you and I were on the same team, we would have just lost this.
I know.
Now, Riley,
now, Michael,
your,
if they get, if they get one right.
I was going skeletons. I was skeletons.
Feeling that. Yeah. It felt right.
Man.
It felt right.
Now, Michael, if they get one right, do they get to go again or shall I move
no,
on?
No, no. Now it comes to us. Now
okay.
To
team
us.
Bigfoot, choose okay. a category.
Michael,
I want to do aliens, of course.
Yeah, good choice.
Let's do it. Let's get right into it.
Boy, by the
Riley
way.
Riley and Michael, what alien species takes a human host by injecting a parasite into a victim's eye? Is it A, Ocularis? Is it B, Vril? C, the Greys? D, Elohims?
Okay, I know like, it's not Vril. Vril.
I feel like A is too obvious because like ocular, like... But maybe
one could argue that the Greys do it by injecting operations in the eye. And then the last one was which?
The last one was Elohim.
The Elohim, that's like a biblical thing.
Yeah.
I think it's A or C.
Ocularis is too, it's too perfect to be right.
Should we say the Greys? Let's say the Greys.
Oh, God.
They inject stuff in your eyes. We also have fire in the sky.
No, that.
The Vril is like a Nazi super energy. I don't think it's the Vril. We got to pick one.
I know.
Come on.
We have to finish
you
the
go.
Show at some
you
point.
You go, Riley. You were right about the last question. You pick it. I trust you.
I want to say D, but I feel like we're going to lose this game.
I'm going to stop both of you. You're both wrong. It's Vril. Michael, it's Vril.
Michael.
Well, wait.
Is it really? I wouldn't have guessed that.
No.
Right. Yeah. You're not playing the game right, because if we get it wrong, they have a chance to answer.
Oh, right.
Well, the answer is Vril. I knew that.
Right. For Team Goblin.
Point. I knew that.
You're going to give it to Goblin? No.
I would have gone with A, frankly. I'm with Riley.
Let's pick another category. I'm doing
aliens
great.
Is still on you're the board. Good. Now it's back to it's 1 to 0.
Yeah, aliens is still on the board. We have alien schemes, tech, or random.
I'm feeling spicy. Let's do random.
I was going to say random.
Here we go.
Let's just go
random
for it.
It is. Dana and Greg, who do conspiracists claim is responsible for the 1961 death of Michael Rockefeller, son of New York Governor Nelson Rockefeller? Is it A, Russian diplomat Ivan Lebedev? Is it B, his father? C, the FBI? Or D, a tribe of cannibals? 1961, death of Michael Rockefeller.
I'm now worried this is going to go for 2 hours.
I want to say A. That's what I want to say.
You want to say A?
Yeah, it's the Russians. It's always the Russians, right?
Yeah.
Wrong. It's a tribal cannibal.
No, you know what? Right.
You're not supposed to tell us.
Right. All right.
We get a chance to answer. Just say wrong.
Right. Bryce is the worst man in black ever.
Listen, you guys don't even understand.
I don't play by the rules,
Michael. He's like, you're wrong about the secret. The secret is actually this.
I don't play by the rules.
You guys
stay away from this because this is what it is.
I went over this with him before the show and I knew he wasn't listening.
Man, once he gets that hat,
and he was like, I got it. Yeah.
All right, here
we go. As soon as he dresses as a Men in Black. All right.
Michael Bryce? Riley. Aliens.
Aliens.
Always aliens. Here we go.
God, the worst person to play a game with. And he just invented one called Dirty Picture Cover Up.
It's a good game.
Yeah, go sign up at dpcugame.com. Here we go.
Don't play with Bryce.
What is the name given to the alien human hybrids that look like giant walking insects? Is it A, Humex? B, Mantids, C, Prawns, or D, Zindi?
Mantids. And if we get it wrong, don't tell us what the correct answer is.
Well, you didn't get it wrong because it's Mantids.
Yes. Yeah. One. Three categories left.
All right, here we go. Aliens is off the table. Greg and Dana, schemes, tech, or random?
You pick this one.
Let's go with schemes.
All right, schemes.
Of course,
here we
you
go.
Choose that.
Schemes.
All right. What U.S. military program used a team of psychics to gather intelligence by doing remote viewing? Is it A, Stargate, B, Stranger Things, C, Montauk, or D, Third Eye?
A, come on.
Bingo, nice. Stargate.
It was Stargate this time.
There we go.
Two to one. We got two chances to get back and win this.
Yeah. Riley Michael, only things left is tech and random.
Tech?
Yeah, tech. I'm feeling tech.
Tech me.
Here we go. In the late 1890s, hundreds of people across the western United States reported seeing what object in the skies overhead? Is it A, a glowing vortex of blue light? B, a group of small, disc-shaped crafts? C, a single massive airship? D, a strobing light coming from the moon?
Okay, the year again?
Is 1890s.
It's airship, the airship. But, it's airship.
100%.
Final answer?
Yes.
Final.
Correct.
Yeah. All right, tie game. This is for the win.
For the win.
Team Goblin, if you get this, you win. If we get it, if you get it wrong and we get it, we win.
Yeah.
Greg and Dana, for the win.
Team Goblin, call them Team Goblin. We went over the rules.
Team Goblin for the win.
For the win. Team Goblin. You know what's funny? I had a discussion like 3 years ago when we actually tried to get Hellier on TV, and it just wasn't happening because they asked us to change everything. And they were like, well, what we want is we want you guys to go to different caves every week and look for goblins. I mean, and I went, I don't want to be the goblin guy. And the guy was like, I got bad news for you, buddy.
You guys are the goblin guy.
We're the goblin guys now.
Done.
The goblin
guy.
That's so network. A different cave every week.
A different underground monster.
What about Hawaiian goblins? Yeah. There's got to be some. Yeah,
the Metahune.
For sure. Lava caves?
Team Goblin for the win. Project A. 119 planned on testing a nuclear weapon where? Is it A, in the hollow earth, B, in a salt mine outside of Chicago, D, on Antarctica, or D, C, on Antarctica,
okay, buddy, or D, you're drinking the non-alcoholic D, beer here.
On the moon.
It's the moon, baby.
Moon.
Final answer?
Final answer. Yeah.
Team Goblin for the win!
Congratulations! Yeah.
Nuke the moon!
It was very close. It was very close.
Thank God the well-researched, well-versed paranormal investigators won this over the out-of-work actor podcasters.
I mean,
you guys well earned played. That win. Congratulations.
Thank you.
We would have. Who knows how it would have turned out if Bryce had followed the rules for the first couple?
Follow the rules. There's no rule. Learn anything here today, it's never follow the rules.
Oh, boy. All right.
Be a rule breaker.
I want to thank everyone attending Phenomenonicon who joined us tonight. We want listeners just like you to make Bigfoot Collectors Club even better. So please listen and subscribe to us on BCC on your favorite podcast app or listen to, and buy merch at Campfire Media's website. We are campfire.media. There's new episodes that drop every Wednesday. You can stay up to date with everything we do by following us on Instagram at Bigfoot Collectors Club and Twitter at Bigfoot Pod. And if you'd like a deeper dive and support the show, you can join us on our Patreon, BCC The Other Side, at patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club. Greg and Dana, huge thank you to you guys. We don't know where Bigfoot can be found. Where can people find you who are listening to this at home?
If they want more information about us, they can always go to hellier.tv or they can go to weirdhq.com. If they're curious about the work we do at the museum, they can go to paramuseum.com. That's probably it.
Nailed it.
Awesome. Fantastic. Thank you and everyone at the conference for hosting us. Until next year.
Of course.
Oh my god.
You know, we do these every 6 months.
Yeah, oh, come back in 6
well,
months.
That's next year. Good night
and go get regressed. Bigfoot Collectors Club is produced by Riley Bray. Our theme song is Come Alone by Sun Eaters, courtesy of Lotus Pool Records. If you like the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps get the podcast to more listeners. To support the show, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club and unlock multiple reward episodes every month.
Hey guys, Heather Ashley here, host of the Big Mad True Crime Podcast. If you're looking for a true crime podcast with all of the details and none of the small talk, you have found your people. Each week, we dive deep into a new case and learn everything there is to know, from getting to know the victim and the impact their case has had on those around them, to the investigation into what happened to them and who is or might be responsible. And if the bad guy looks like he might drink whiskey by a dumpster or has the social skills of an ogre, we say it because we were all thinking it anyway. As the name suggests, we get big mad over true crime, and I would love to have you join our incredible community of listeners with big hearts and zero time for small talk. Subscribe to Big Mad True Crime anywhere you listen to podcasts and listen to new episodes every single Monday.
Hey, this is Eric Molinsky, host of the podcast Imaginary Worlds. Each episode, I explore different sci-fi fantasy genres, talking with filmmakers, novelists, game designers, cosplayers, comic book artists, and anyone who works in the field of make-believe. I also look at the fan experience, asking, why do we suspend our disbelief? You can subscribe to Imaginary Worlds wherever you get your podcasts.